Quietus contains homeopathic ingredients traditionally used to provide relief.
Can you hear that sound? That ringing, that hissing.
I can't get to sleep with it.
I can't concentrate. I hear it constantly. Everywhere I go, it doesn't go away. It drives me nuts.
It's tinnitus.
A constant ringing in your ear caused by loud machines.
Loud music.
Ah, finally. Quietus.
I love Quietus.
I couldn't believe it. No more ringing in the ears. No more hissing sound.
Quiet relief so I can work.
No more ringing. No more loud fans.
And I sleep like a baby.
If you're suffering from tinnitus, I urge you to try Quietus.
After trying Quietus, the ringing stopped and I felt like I got my life back.
Quietus is real, my friend.
Quietus has changed my life.
Call right now for your risk-free trial of Quietus at 1-800-860-8517. That's 1-800-860-8517. Stop the ringing now. 1-800-860-8517. That's 1-800-860-8517.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Yeah, I'm not only cheap, I'm easy. Welcome to...
That's not news.
Foodie and the Beast with David Nikki Nellis.
Everybody knows that. Everybody knows
Ixnay on the Auchingtay. Okay. We're back in the studio. We had a great live remote of the show last week from Post in the Monaco Hotel.
It was fabulous.
Yeah, we got a crushing crowd and good food. And mm-hmm. That poor lamb got all eaten up. It was fun. And yesterday we were out at the Plains at Great Meadow for the International Gold Cup. We were judging the tailgating competition, and there were some amazing...
Those people take it really seriously. They do. It was fun. That was a very good time.
There were a lot of Bentleys out there.
There were a lot of Bentleys.
Next year, anyway.
I need to go with somebody who has a Bentley. Or a Rolls Royce.
Well,
I'll take either.
I just want to say very briefly that when I die, you can buy a Bentley. There we go. All right.
Okay.
So
well.
Soon it'll just be foodie. All right. Enough of us. So we have an amazing show today.
We do.
Got a lot going on. Nationally famous, world famous chef Jacques Pepin is going to be on the phone with us in a little while from mm-hmm. L.A. Nick Alcott is here. He plays legendary chef James Beard in the Roundhouse Theater's production of I Love to Eat. And he's in with us to talk about that and eating and cooking and James Beard and all kinds of cool stuff.
Now, if you've been up and down 14th Street, then you know it is exploding with great new restaurants and concepts. And the Matchbox guys are here.
Ooh, the Matchbox guys.
They brought food. Yay. And they are opening some new spaces on there and in other places as well in Virginia. So we're going to hear all about it. And Danny Fisher is in studio. He's the GM over at Ripple. He's going to be pouring Rhone wines. I can't think of a... better way to start my Sunday morning.
I got
morning.
Confused. I thought it was Danny Fisher from Rhone who's going to be pouring Ripple, and I thought, I don't know that I'm up for that. But
that was so not funny.
They laughed because they are smart, right. And they're not married to me. We haven't heard that one before. All right, and Washington Post food writer David Hagedorn, an old friend of the show.
That's not nice.
Is in. He's spearheading the along with Nikki, mm-hmm. the October 24th Chefs for Equality fundraiser benefiting marriage equality. And he's in with details about what's happening there and how you can still get your hands on the... There are only really a couple of tickets left, so...
So, David, let's just start very quickly. Let's just give a 411 on the event on this Wednesday.
Well, we have 60 chefs, over 60 chefs, mm-hmm. and 15 mixologists. And we have a fashion component. We have bespoke suits being modeled and auctioned off.
For those who don't know what a bespoke suit is, can you please explain?
Handmade.
Okay, thank you.
Personally, for you.
Bespoke is Italian for handmade. Didn't you know that?
And we have a terrific auction, live and silent auction. And the whole space of the Ritz-Carlton in the West End is being designed by Christopher Vasquez and Rick Davis of Amaryllis Floral and Event Design.
They do such fabulous, fabulous things. Very exciting.
And everyone signed on right away. You know, we started this project in August, really. The Human Rights Campaign approached me to do this event, and I was only thrilled to do it, to raise money for the marriage equality effort in Maryland. And everyone signed on very quickly.
Cool. And so can we just talk? We only have a minute right now, but at the end of the show, I want to talk about these personalized chef's tables.
Yes.
Because this is a really different component for an event of this size instead of just your typical dine around. So tell us, like, who's being paired together.
Well, the theme of the event is two people joining together. So I thought it would be a great idea to have two superstar chefs team up and prepare a five-course dinner for eight right in on the ballroom floor in the middle of the action, and right in front of those tables. So Cahal Armstrong and RJ Cooper are doing a table. Spike Jurdy.
I want to watch that one happen.
Yeah, well, drama, drama at every table, I promise. And
RJ.
Michelle Richard and Brian Voltaggio are teaming up, and Cedric Mopillier and Devin Buskaya, the new chef at the West End Bistro, is doing a table. Enzo Fargione and Jeff Boobin, who's getting ready Woodward Grill.
Fargione.
Well, that's going to be great. Terrific. All right, we'll get more details on that.
I just want to say that I am a big fan of equality in marriage. I just can't figure out why I can't get that kind of treatment in my own marriage.
You've been married three times. You could do it again.
I think that's weighted correctly.
Does everyone know that the other two died of exhaustion? Okay. All right. So let's go over to Danny Fisher. Danny, you're the GM at Ripple, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, but you're also a wine expert.
I'm kind of the wine guy, a little bit of a background on wine, worked in the industry for about 10 years, specifically on the wine side. I've worked for an importer, I've worked for a couple restaurants, another restaurant here in the city, but been with Ripple since we opened and in charge of the wine list and helping educate people on some fun wines out there.
So why Rhone? What's with the Rhone wines?
Rhone wines... very good during the fall. They're kind of lend to heartier dishes, better pairings with those, both whites and reds. Syrah is kind of a nice peppery, spicy wine, and kind of helps out with dishes like venison and game birds like quail and things like that.
Which are all coming around right now. Okay, so what are we going to start with? Like, you brought such an array this morning, and I see bubbly.
I've got a little bubble here that was just kind of for everyone in studio. Nothing to do with the Rhone Valley.
Oh, okay.
It's some champagne, but you all love it.
We don't turn any of it down. Right. We probably would not turn down Ripple. So.
Okay. I have to say right now, that's it with the Ripple jokes.
Okay, no
it's
more
all
Ripple
over.
Jokes.
No more Ripple
done.
Jokes. We're done with the Ripple
jokes. I've been
jokes.
Put in my place.
Okay, so sorry. Please.
Unless it has to do with champagne, right?
Okay, so go ahead.
The first wine that we're pouring here today is the Cupe Syrah from Central Coast in California. And the word Cupe actually means in Chumash, the native language around there for the Native Americans, is the poppy seed. So it has to do with a poppy plant, and it's 100% Syrah, 2010 vintage, just kind of a nice peppery, spicy notes to this wine.
Yum. All right. Well, let's have a taste.
Okay. All right. So let's talk to Nick Olcott. Nick, you're playing James Beard in the Roundhouse Theater's production of I Love to Eat. I guess we should start from the start because you're a bit of a Renaissance man yourself.
That's one way to put it.
Hey, man, that's what you told me. So
means I can't hold one job. I have to have seven.
But, I mean, you're an actor, a producer, a director, and the last couple of years you've been directing more than acting. So tell us about that and how you ended up back on stage.
Yeah, I started out as an actor and about 12 years ago I went almost exclusively in the directing direction, and most recently into opera directing, and it was taking me away from the acting, but I was getting the urge back to go back on stage, and I started auditioning for a few shows, and then I read this script that I'd picked up just because the title sort of spoke to my soul. I Love to Eat is the name of it, and that really kind of appealed to me, so I picked it up as a one-man show about James Beard, and I said, the playwright doesn't know me, but he's written this play just for me. Well, it's perfect. It's a perfect match for me.
Why? Tell us why.
Well, number one, I mean, look like actor, James Beard.
Well.
I know that's not going to get me a whole lot of dates, but
he and I share a lot of similarities. We're both from the West. Mm-hmm. Both realized we were gay at a very young age. Mm-hmm. Both knew that we wanted to get out of the West and into the bigger world. Both had a love of theater, drama, opera. He actually first aspired to be an opera singer, mm-hmm. then to be a Hollywood star, then to be a Broadway star, and only stumbled into cooking to make a living. So we had a lot in common there. Both of our mothers were English, from the same county even in England, and seemed to be very similar people who wanted their sons to experience more than small-town Western living. And so I felt an immediate connection with him. And then the script reveals he's a very complex man, a very difficult man in some ways, a very lonely man who yet had this incredible persona as being a gregarious, jolly giant.
Right.
So I could really, there was a character that I could really dig my actor teeth into.
Well, and how much, after you read the script and you decided it was something you wanted to do, how much research did you have to do on James Beard?
I read, there's a very, very good biography of him by Robert Clark called, with the beautiful title, The Solace of Food. Mm-hmm. And I read that. I read a number of newspaper articles, and he did a lot of interviews.
Right.
There are clips available of him from the Today Show and from his cooking show, which was on Canadian television in the 60s, mm-hmm. live from Winnipeg. How often do you hear that tag?
Not often.
So I did that, and then I tried. I knew I couldn't do a Julia and Julie thing mm-hmm. on him. He wrote too many cookbooks. But I tried to cook my way, what's the word I'm looking for, in the right time sequence.
Like
chronological. Chronological, thank you very much. chronologically. Through his life, so he wrote a wonderful memoir called Delights and Prejudices, which is his own. It's a memoir with recipes, and mm-hmm. I tried to cook my way chronologically through his food life. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be in Nova Scotia this summer, and he grew up in Portland, Oregon, so we started with the same place, with fresh seafood, and mm-hmm. discovered wonderful things about fresh seafood.
Now, were you a big cook to begin with?
I was no cook at all.
Okay.
My standard joke was, what will I make for dinner? Reservations.
Excellent.
I'm a big eater, as mm-hmm. you can tell by looking at me, but I had never liked to cook. I'd never really enjoyed it. I didn't grow up cooking. My mother was not a cook, as opposed to Mr. Beard's mother, who was a cook. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn about the joy of cooking. That's quoting another book. But I really did discover, I had cooking for me had always been a chore, something to get over with. I mean, mm-hmm. the big cookbook in my household when I was growing up was Peg Bracken's I Hate to Cook book.
Oh, God.
And that's sort of the...
What a way to sell it.
Well, it was a big seller in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, that was a huge phenomenon, the I Hate to Cook series.
Interesting.
So that's the attitude I'd grown up with. And I got to spend a summer really experiencing how pleasurable it is to spend a whole day doing nothing but thinking about food, and there are wonderful markets up in Nova Scotia.
I feel like that's how I live my life.
Well, I envy you. I got to tell you, I had a taste of it for 3 months, uh-huh. and it's something else. It's a nice thing to do.
So is the character you play at the Roundhouse your interpretation of James Beard's way, or is it as close to, the real thing as possible?
Well, who knows? I mean, I have encountered a couple of people who knew Mr. Beard, and they have, if they've been kind enough not to comment on how close I'm coming to him. It's hard to tell. His television appearance has actually come off a little flat. He comes mm-hmm. off as a little sans
personality. We watched some of it last night.
But in truth, he was supposed to have been an enormous personality and enormously charming in person. And, of course, we're dealing with two levels of interpretation, because I also have the playwright, James Still, has mm-hmm. written the play. So he's come up with a version of Mr. Beard, and then it's my interpretation of that version of Mr. Beard. So who knows how truthful we are to the literal Mr. Beard, but I hope we're capturing that spirit which he had, that incredibly generous, funny, wonderful, and yet ultimately very sad person who he was.
Well, because he did live larger than life. I mean, were you able to travel up to the James Beard House in New York?
I was not able to just because of my schedule, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But both the director and the set designer went up there. And
okay. Is that what the set is supposed to be?
The set is a reproduction of his kitchen on West 12th Street.
Oh, yes. So you don't have the shower in the middle?
No, I talk about the shower.
Okay.
But no, we don't have the shower, and I don't cook in the nude.
Okay.
I talk about cooking in the nude, but everyone will be glad to know I don't actually do it.
Excellent.
But no, we just have the kitchen.
No, you just lost a bunch of ticket sales. People are like, no way, I want to see you naked.
Want to buy some tickets?
Okay. All right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk to Jacques Pepin next. But when we come back after him, we'll get back to you and more about the show. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are sipping on some delicious brown wine, and we'll be talking with Chef Jacques Pepin when we get back.
You wouldn't drive your kids in the car without them wearing seatbelts, would you? So why leave them unprotected when you're gone? Learn about the latest techniques for maximizing your wealth and protecting your assets for your heirs. Join me, Wayne Zell, for Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I'm an estate planning attorney with Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman. Each week, we talk about how you can realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. That's Blueprint for Wealth, Saturdays at 10 a.m., right here on 1500 AM.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Soon, this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We've got Danny Fisher from Ripple back here. And Danny, you've got a bunch of Rhone wines over there. I honestly don't know that I can say I've ever had a Rhone wine, have I?
Yes, you have.
I have?
You have.
Probably a few.
Right. Chateau Neuf de Pape.
Yep,
exactly. We had that a week ago.
Code well, the show's called
a really,
Foodie
really
and the
good
Beast.
One, I might add.
I guess we know who the Beast is.
Right.
All right. So how many Rhone wines? I see a bunch over there, but how many Rhone wines do you guys carry?
Gosh, somewhere around 40 wines or so.
Okay.
We're pouring around 20 by the glass right now,
mm-hmm.
both red and white.
And tell us a little bit about the next wine you're going to be pouring.
The next one I'm pouring is, again, 100% Syrah from Cros Hermitage in mm-hmm. the northern Rhone.
Mm-hmm.
So the Rhone is divided into the north and the south, and the north is typically Syrah-based, while the south is more Grenache-based and is more based on blends, where okay. Chateau Neuf de Pape is.
Okay, great. So what kind of flavors can we be looking for in the next pour?
Definitely some currants, dark fruit, definitely spice.
Great.
Black pepper.
Love it. Okay, we're ready for the next one. All right.
Chef, are you on the phone?
Yep.
Good morning,
welcome.
Chef.
Welcome. Well, we're joined by Chef Jacques Pepin. I would say in by way of intro that there are very few chefs, I think, that are known the world over. And Chef is certainly one of America's best-known chefs, and he's a cookbook author. I think you published 25 or 26 cookbooks, if I count
yeah,
right.
Something like this.
Not bad. He's got a new series coming up on that airs this fall called The Essential Pepin. And you've got a companion cookbook of the same name with more than 700 all-time favorite recipes from your life, which I guess releases.
That one's already out.
Released, excuse mm-hmm. me, in October of 11. My
right.
bad. Okay, and then actually you'll be coming to Washington. You and your daughter Claudine will be at the Metro Cooking and Entertaining Show on November the 4th. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are correct
yeah,
about that.
I mean.
You're right, yep.
All right, so Chef, I mean, so many people know you and your work, and we are betting, but not many people may know how it all got started. Tell us a little bit, I mean, about your early days.
Oh, my early days. I mean, it's so far that I don't remember.
I know it's early in the morning there, but come on.
Right. I've been in the kitchen, 63 years or something like this?
Mm-hmm.
So when I left home, and that was in France, in Lyon, my mother had a restaurant, and I left home to go into apprenticeship. But as I said, at 13, when I left home, home was already a restaurant. So, and I came to America in 1959, at the end of 1959, and worked at the Pavillon and so forth. So it was really another world and another America, you know, half a century ago.
Mm-hmm. And as you cook through the States, how did you wind up writing cookbooks? I mean, how did you sort of change from working in restaurants into a cookbook author and a television personality? How did it all evolve for you?
Well, I think it was something gradual, you know, which, as I say, I work at the Pavillon, and at that time I was going to Colombia as well. Mm-hmm. So I start writing for one magazine or another. And at some point in my life, I also had very severe car accidents. So that kind of pushed me a little bit in the direction of writing and giving classes. And it was at the time of in the 60s and 70s when cooking school kind of exploded, cook workshop, you know, so I started doing that type of thing. And eventually that led to do some television for PBS. And as of now, I've done certainly for the last 25 years, I've done 13 series of 26 shows for KQED, the PBS station in San Francisco. So I have been a feature there for a quarter of a century. So, and now I have that new series, as I say, coming out.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned, called Essential Pépin. And inside what I have, which I think make the book, is actually a 3-hour DVD of technique as part of the book, which show you how to, and this is what you teach in professional kitchen. I mean, I'm still dean of study at the French Culinary Institute in New York for the last 25 years, and I teach at Boston University for, what, the last 31 years or so. So I live in Connecticut. I'm somewhere in between. As you can recognize by my accent, it's pure, you
right,
know.
Right, but that's what we thought.
I was going to say Boston.
England,
yeah.
Connecticut Yankee, say, right.
Pack the cat.
Right. Well, Chef, let me ask you, I mean, with your new book coming out, Jacques Pepin's New and Complete Techniques, I mean, it won't be out until November 13th, but apparently it will be available at the Metro Cooking and Entertaining Show on November 4th. This is sort of a follow-up to your 2001 book of the same name. How much have techniques changed over the last 10-plus years?
Well, that's an interesting point. You know, that the whole idea, I mean, if I look, I did a book in 1974 or 5 called La Technique, and then it was followed by another one called La Méthode, which was a synonym. Eventually, it was put together, as you say, like 12 years ago, and now it's coming back again. I don't cook the way I did 40 years ago or when I did that book. It's quite different, the amount of time we cook vegetable, the amount of time we cook fish, the amount of fat, the type of fat we put in it. So it's quite different. However, the way you beat an egg white, the way you bone out a chicken, the way you do a caramel cage, or the way you make an omelette is the same. That doesn't really change, and that's why we teach that type of thing in professional school, to mm-hmm. know how to cook. And if years ago you taught people how to poach an egg the right way, and we serve it with Hollandaise sauce and some ham and two, you know, egg Benedictine was very classic. Now you still show them how to poach an egg exactly the same way, except you don't serve it with Hollandaise sauce. You may serve it with a tiny asparagus tip and an emulsion of butter or whatever. But the technique really do not change much, and that's why, as professional, that's what you teach.
But the recipes change, and that's one question I had, because in the Essential Pepin, which I can now speak to.
Yes, go right ahead.
There's 700 recipes in there, and they're, you know, I think the subtitle says more than 700 all-time favorites from my life. So you've got 700 recipes. How often do you go back and update them, and what drives that?
Well, that's a good point. You know, when we started doing that book, you know, 2-3 years ago, we started with like 3,000 recipes and started eliminating because it was too redundant, one thing or another. And at that point, you know, I remember there was a book coming out in the New York Times favorite, which is like over 1,000 recipes, and they left it the way it was in the 70s, 80s, and so forth, just to show people the way things were. And I could have done the same thing. In fact, it was kind of a conundrum. Do I leave it this way, or do I change it to make it more usable today? And I choose the second option, and it ended up being probably more work than doing it from scratch. Because as I say, many things have changed in terms of amount of cooking, amount of time cooking vegetable, fish, meat, type of fat, and so forth. So I did change it to update them, you know.
Well, and do you think that people, I mean, in general, from when you started writing cookbooks, do you think that people, there is a greater interest in cooking and people are more interested in it and are looking for ways to eat healthier or more seasonal? I mean, is that also a part of how you're putting your recipes together?
Well, that's a long question. I mean, to start with, probably in the last, I read somewhere in the last, 25 years when it started the health craze, you know, and so forth, we've written something like 16,000 health book, you know, on what to eat and what not to lose weight, and we are now 40% fatter than we were 30 years ago. So that doesn't seem to work well. That's one thing. And on the other hand, I have to say that when I came to America and half a century ago, there was only one type of salad in the supermarket, and that was iceberg. There was no leek, no oriental vegetable, none of the different vinegar, oil, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the supermarkets have never been as beautiful as they are today. And when people tell me, well, no one cook anymore, I feel, what do they do with the stuff at the end of the week then? The supermarket, they must.
Put it in the compost.
Someone must buy it because every week, you know, it's replenished again full. So, yes, differently, and this is what I did. I did two series on television called Fast Food My Way. And in a sense, I use what you do in a professional kitchen when you have someone, the prep cook, coming in the morning, boning out the chicken, slicing the mushroom, boning out the fish, washing the spinach. That's what you can find in the supermarket now. So I show people how to buy, you know, skinless, boneless breast of chicken, and then you can have pre-sliced mushroom, and you can have pre-washed spinach. You have a non-stick pan, and you can have very fresh ingredients too, and do a dish in a few minutes using the supermarket as a prep cook, in a sense, because now you can find that in the supermarket that you couldn't maybe 20 years ago or so.
Chef, I'm going to take you in a different direction because when people found out you were on our show, they started trying to hit us up for tickets to the Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining Show. That happened right away. So let's talk about the show. You'll be there on November the 4th, if I'm correct. I hope I am.
Third and fourth.
Third and fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little about what you'll be doing there.
Well, great. I'm coming with my daughter, Claudine. As I say, I live in Connecticut. She lives in Rhode Island, not too far up the road. Her husband teaches at Johnson & Well. He's a chef as well. And so Claudine and I will do a demonstration. We are doing a polenta with a mushroom ragu, with mushroom, corn, tomato, onion, mushroom, and so forth. And then we are doing three or four dish. We're doing a blade steak, a kind of home steak sauté with shallots and herbs and so forth. And with that, we're doing a glazed carrot with olive. And finally, our dessert, we're doing crepe, fresh crepe, to show people how to do crepe stuff with jam and different things. So the whole menu that we'll do in about 45 minutes or so. And so it's fun. I'm looking forward to haven't been to Washington in a couple of years. And I know that I'm going to come on Saturday. I'm actually coming with the train, and I'll probably go and have dinner at Central with Michel Richard, with a friend of mine, and my daughter, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, fantastic. We can put all that information out there now. Now, you're also, but you'll be signing your new book there, correct? Is that something else you'll be doing too?
Yes, I'm going to sign, Essential Pépin, right, which is the book. It came out last year.
Right.
So it's still my new book because I have another one coming out. The way I have that revision of technique, which is coming out mid-November.
Oh, we had heard that book, your new one that's coming out mid-November, was going to be available at the Metro Cooking and Entertaining Show as like a little special thing.
Oh, yes?
Yes. Well, see, look, I know something.
I haven't seen any copy yet.
Okay.
So, or maybe they got copy. Well, that'd be great. Fine. I'll sign one or the other. Both. That'd be great.
Chef, thank you so much for your time this morning. And we'll look forward to seeing you at the Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining Show November 3rd and 4th.
Thank you. So do I. Thank you. And
bye-bye,
have a great
Chef.
Day.
Great, Chef. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec. As winter approaches, relaxing on a patio becomes but a memory. Or does it? Not at Penn Quarter's Postmodern Brasserie. They are transforming their upper courtyard into a cozy, winter-warm outdoor lounge. I'm talking couches, ambient lighting, heat lamps, and cozy warming blankets. You'll enjoy tasty treats, of course, from Chef Dennis Marin. Think sweet hot fondues and warm winter cocktails. Lots of libations to keep you nice and warm throughout the winter. Enjoy the Post Patio Tuesdays through Saturdays this winter from 4 p.m. to close. But mark your calendar. Saturday, November 3rd is the launch event. There'll be lots of complimentary tastes and lots of warm fun.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And one thing I neglected to say at the start of the show is our good friend Michael Birchenall from the Food Service Monthly. He's the photographer. He's the publisher. He's everything there. He's in the hospital. He had a little surgery, but we understand he's kicking butt and taking names again. Yeah. So, Michael, get out of bed and get back to work, you bum. Lazy. That's right.
Virtual chicken soup.
So let's go back to Nick Alcott and talk a little bit more about the show. And you know what? We should probably flog the where to get tickets stuff too.
Absolutely.
And how long you're there for? I mean, let's give the whole deal.
The show runs through November 4th, so you really got today and two more weeks to get there.
Hurry.
Tickets are available at roundhousetheater.org, and that's theater spelled R-E a la Française. Roundhousetheater.org, or you can call the box office at 240-640-1100.
And
they've been plying me with wine, so that's pretty amazing.
You didn't transpose anything. It was nicely done. But the Roundhouse is right up, right near the metro station at Wisconsin Avenue and East-West Highway in Bethesda.
Absolutely. Well, it's a beautiful new theater, too.
In the heart of Bethesda, very convenient to a lot of fine restaurants. So, and it's a short show, so you can have dinner after the show or before the show.
And you can also stop in at our house and have some Rhone wine. All right, so last question. Do you cook on stage? Is there any of that?
People what they can experience.
They will be able to experience me talking a lot about food. They will get to see the magic, and I challenge everyone to find out how we're doing this. I make mayonnaise on stage in 21 seconds. Come see how that is possible. In a dinner plate with a fork.
Oh.
No food processor involved.
It's going to be like just a little
whiz. Thank you very much. No. So I do that, and I make what is, it's amazing to believe now, but it's the thing that put Mr. Beard on the map. It was his first review in the New York Times. It's for an hors d'oeuvre, which he called onion rings, which is nothing more than a round of bread spread with mayonnaise, a raw onion, another round of bread on top, mayonnaise around the edge, rolled in parsley. And he served this at cocktail parties in New York in 1937, 1938, and they were such a sensation. I think why it must have been such a revelation at the time is it was processed foods were so much in the ascendancy that all canapes were, you know, cheese whiz on a Ritz cracker with a bottled pimento. And here came something that was, you know, it was freshly made brioche that he had made, freshly made mayonnaise, raw onion, fresh parsley. It was the taste of fresh, the taste of real, as opposed to processed food. And it was just, it was a sensation. It's what made him famous. And it's hard to imagine now that that is the case.
Well, I think actually when we were talking to Chef Pepin on the phone and I asked the question about how people's cooking had changed, you know, he talked about the country being heavier, but that really has to do more with processed food than how people, the people who are cooking at home are healthier.
Absolutely. I got to tell you this from personal experience. In preparing for this role, I have lost 20 pounds.
Oh my God, good for you.
And that's because I've been cooking and eating real food instead of eating fast food. Because of my busy schedule, I was a great fast food hamburger eater. But I find you eat one Mr. Beard hamburger, which is full of cream and butter and fried in olive oil. You eat one of those and you're satisfied for the day. You know, that's such good food. It tastes so good. You don't want anything more. You eat a fast food hamburger.
You're still hungry.
You're still hungry. You start craving the sweet. Then you have the milkshake. Then you have the fries. Then, you know, and it just, it's one thing after another. But I've found with eating this diet, even though it's full of butter and fat, it's so satisfying that I don't eat more.
That's why the friends stay thin.
it's really phenomenal. I have not tried to lose weight, and I've been dropping the pounds.
Well, good for you.
You're a shadow of your former self.
I am. I'm only huge now instead of humongous.
Unfortunately, we have to move on, but make sure that everybody's got the website once more so they know how to find their tickets.
www.roundhousetheater.org.
But it's R-E.
R-E.
And don't
Let's not mess that up, people.
Teatro.
Thank you so much, Nick, for coming
Thanks,
in.
Nick,
we really appreciate it.
All right, Danny.
All right, so Danny, let's talk a little bit about what Logan Cox, the chef at Ripple, is doing to accompany these wines. Because a lot of Rhone wines really need some food to be wrapped around. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
I mean, we're not doing that yet this morning, but we got Matchbox in, so I have a feeling it's coming soon.
Yeah, definitely. You'll find the last wine will definitely require food, and that's kind of the reason I brought it.
Okay.
A little Syrah Grenache blend. But Logan's doing some really fun things right now. He's got a great beef cheek on the menu that goes great with Rhone wines. He has a venison dish on the menu from Schaefer Farms in Pennsylvania, which is obviously a farm-raised venison, a little less gamey than what you would normally think of from traditional venison.
I love venison, so it's not off-putting to me at all.
It's super lean and, you know, It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a strip loin on the menu, Virginia raised beef. And believe it or not, we're doing a Spanish mackerel that actually goes great with Rhone wines.
Well, that is actually interesting because I don't think most people will drink a heavy red like a Rhone with fish, even though mackerel is kind of oily.
It's a little bit oily. But the tannins and also the acid level of Rhone style wines, both Syrah and Grenache based wines, they lend very well in the fall to a little bit heartier of fish dishes.
And how do people respond to that? I mean, when you say to somebody, you're ordering fish, I'm going to put this red with it. Do people follow the rules? Are they rule followers? Like, no red with fish. I mean, how do people respond? Or they don't.
I think that people respect our opinions, and you know, oftentimes we'll give them a taste of something with their dishes, and they'll be like, "Oh, this works very, very well," where they may be a little bit skeptical ahead of time. But you know, we have a very trusting clientele and a pretty good knowledge base on our part, so people tend to believe what we say.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, what are you going to pour next?
Next up, I have a Carignan blend from Mendocino in California.
Okay.
So again, a Rhone style wine from Leoco.
I was going to say, so it's not really a Rhone, but it's in the Rhone style.
It's in the Rhone style, which means that it basically has Rhone varietals in it. So wines that are indigenous to the Rhone Valley in France are Syrah, Grenache, Cinsault, Carignan, Mourvèdre. You know, you can go on and on. There's about 18 varietals.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, pour away, I say.
Okay.
Deal.
Great.
All right. So let's change the subject. We're going to switch over and talk Matchbox. We've got Jeff Richardson, who's the executive chef from Matchbox. Ty Neal, who's one of the partners in the Matchbox Food Group. Mouthful. And Michelle Hebert. Sorry, did I do that right?
Hebert.
Oh, it's French.
French. Oh, my God.
Bonjour, mon ami. All right, sorry. Hebert, who is the GM with Matchbox. And you guys are going crazy.
Kicking tushies and taking names.
We're having fun.
I know, right? So, 14th Street. insane. How big is it? Tell us all about it. When is it opening? Give us everything.
About 4 weeks, Jeff.
We're about 3-4 weeks out.
Okay. And how is it, like, is it a typical, is it your model? Or how is Matchbox on 14th different than, say, Matchbox Rockville, Matchbox Downtown? Like, how is it different?
Starts with a beautiful building, I think.
Gorgeous building. Yeah. Gorgeous layout.
Nick and I were just talking before about that he performed in the building there at 14th and T. Mm-hmm. And this is a beautiful building built in 1907. So it starts with great bones. You've got incredible timber beam ceilings. The brick, the steel, it is a stunning building to start with. And it's going to be a beautiful restaurant there.
But is it when I think of Matchbox Rockville, I mean, that place is always slammed. It's a tremendous space. This place is going to be smaller, right? I mean, it's going to have to be.
A little bit smaller, two floors. Bit.
Yeah, it's going to be three levels. Mm-hmm. The patio seating will be a little bit smaller. It's going to seat about 240 inside and about 60
well, that's
on
a
the
good
patio.
Size.
So,
total.
Yeah, it's a really nice size for this DC area.
Absolutely. Well, especially for restaurants on 14th Street, you don't have a lot of restaurants serving that size.
Well,
that's
cranes in the air will tell you about what the growth that's coming is.
Well,
really,
I know, it's
exciting,
insane.
Really exciting stuff. On
it is exciting, except there's no parking. I mean, that's just my
opinion. Well, speaking of exciting, let's talk to Jeff a little because you got promoted to executive chef to run this bad boy.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And I think it's going to be important for us to taste why they promoted you here.
Yeah, so tell us what you're doing. So you're at the Matchbox on 14th. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So, do you get to play with the menu a little bit? Do you get a little autonomy?
Yeah.
Or
me and a couple other chefs got together and collaborated from most of the other Matchboxes around the way. Took some good points out of it and also left its little 14th Street to shine on its own a little bit. All the Matchboxes are about 80% the same menu, and then different 20% for each area that it's in.
I think that's important.
One of the cool things that we do is we allow the chefs some latitude because we decided a while back that that we weren't going to do the cookie cutter. And so the chefs, the happiest day I saw the chefs is when we got them all together and we were deciding what a dish should be. And it's a collaboration, kind of an Iron Chef fun thing that we do. Mm-hmm. But then there was disappointment from some of the chefs that said, well, wait a minute, I want to cook for my neighborhood. And so we've allowed Shannon at China's at Capitol Hill and Cliff Wharton at Chinatown and now Jeff Richardson at 14th and T to really put their own spin on some cool stuff for the neighborhood.
Well, I think it's also important given that the areas are so diverse. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you're serving on Rockville Pike is totally different than what you're going to serve downtown
Absolutely.
Or on Cap Hill.
Well,
I mean, you've got different people.
Now here's
going
the question. If you've got a fine dining restaurant, quality control is one thing. When you've got a restaurant like Matchbox, which is still fine food, but Rockville's always slammed. I never drive by there, but that I don't see people.
I know, you guys could have just shut the doors at that point.
Legs,
you could have been like, and we're done.
So the question is, what kind of a challenge is it to maintain, that quality level so that everybody's got, everybody walks away with that same good
consistency.
Feeling.
It's number one. The food is number one.
And I think with the town of chefs that we have within the group, we keep it fresh. We do seasonal menu changes. So we change the menu like twice a year just to keep everything fresh, keep everything new for when you come back to Matchbox. You still get the Matchbox experience and you always get a twist with it.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that would surprise people about Matchbox, I say even though it's casual food, but is the talent level of the chefs. And we don't hire kitchen managers. We hire a pretty serious, talented breed of cat to run the show. So the food quality and the talent level I think would surprise people.
And as you grow, how hard is it to train your staff? I mean, how?
Good question, because you've got Merrifield's coming too, right?
Right, because you also have Mosaic. So as you grow, not only does your food quality have to stay at a certain level, but your service has to stay at a certain level. And that's a lot of people to manage. So what sort of training do you have in place to make sure that your brand is consistent?
Well, actually, we have just come out with our newest and most extensive training program. We just opened it up at our general manager's meeting this week. So we're really excited about that. It started with our staff that we're hiring for 14th. So I'm very excited to see it kind of unveiled this week. This week coming up, I'll be helping with our new staff. So that's something we're constantly developing and growing because we can't stop the training as we keep getting bigger.
Sure.
So when you open a new location, do you mix some of your experienced hands with the new folks to make sure that there's...
Yes, we have staff coming from several of the restaurants, some that are going to come and stay that have moved to the D.C. area, and some that are going to come and help us train and get it off the ground and then probably go back to their other locations so that we have kind of that old experience in there.
Okay, great. Wait. We have to take a break.
I don't want
to. Okay. We have to, right? Am I right? We have to take a break. Okay. All right. We have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk about Ted's Bulletin.
Cool.
And Mosaic. I mean, you guys have a lot going on. I want to talk about everything that's happening. And you brought all that fabulous food. Don't just let it sit there.
Get to work, Chef.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
The patio is now open at Founding Farmers in Potomac. Dining al fresco in Montgomery County was never better. It's an idyllic setting, away from traffic, comfortable seating in a luscious garden setting. Dine al fresco on cool evenings around the fire pit. Founding Farmers in Montgomery County, just off Route 270 at Montrose Road West. A delicious getaway for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and weekend brunch. Founding Farmers, award-winning menus of great scratch-made foods with ingredients from American family farmers and from across the region. See the menu at wearefoundingfarmers.com.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
And I can just read on the plane without any problem. Like now, when I'm on the airplane and somebody has a Kindle, they either have to turn on the light because a Kindle doesn't have any light built into it, or they also have these little small lights that clamp onto the side of the Kindle that lights it up because the Kindle is not a backlit screen. On the other hand, when I go to the swimming pool and there's bright sunlight, I cannot use the iPad.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to the folks from Matchbox, but before we do that, I just want to quickly thank the people that make this show possible. And if you're not one of them, don't feel bad. You can always get on the train. Georgetown Bakery, the people at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, that's the Two Rusticos, Evening Star, Tallulah, Vermilion, Buzz Bakery, Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key. People at the two Founding Farmers, one in Potomac and one downtown.
And they have a new one coming in November. Farmers, Fishers, Bakers.
Yeah, at Georgetown Harbor.
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
Okay.
But you interrupted me, as usual. Bethesda Central Farm Market, all the Blacks restaurants, Black Market, Black Salt, Blacks in Bethesda. Mm-hmm. What else we got? The Pearl Dive.
And they're going to be in Mosaic, too.
And they're going to be out at Mosaic, correct. And our friends at Post, Modern Brasserie, down at the Kempton Monaco in D.C. in Penn Quarter. Thanks very much for supporting the show. All right, let's get back to the Matchbox people. And we...
What are we eating?
Somebody's got to describe the plate that was just put in front of us.
Chef Jeff, tell us what's happening here.
All right, what I have here is hopefully one of our most signature dishes that I'll be at 14th Street. It's my personal recipe. It's a little coconut curry braised short ribs with roasted fingerling potatoes and fire roasted turmeric vegetables of cauliflower and baby carrots.
The meat is so good.
It's yummy.
It should be fall off.
It is fall off.
About the braise.
It's fabulous. We love the braise.
I put a little gram masala, salt, pepper, and sugar. Sear it real quick on the outside, and then I braise it in the coconut curry for 7 hours at 200 degrees.
So you just slow and low.
Slow and low is the way to go.
That's great.
And it just falls right off the bone.
It's yummy.
You don't need a knife or anything.
Cauliflower is great.
Fabulous.
You get the little heat from the vegetables and the sweetness from the coconut curry, and it's very, very fall colorful, you know, perfect for this time of year.
No, it's it looks like fall on the plate. I mean, yes, it really does.
That's
beautiful.
That's what we're going for.
So
it just
let me
fell
ask
on
you,
my lap.
Yeah, well, that's because you're a slob. So let me ask you, you know, so the flames and everything that you have at all your locations, will that be there on 14th Street too?
Absolutely.
They didn't give you a problem on 14th Street? Because they're tough over there.
Beautiful fire pit right at the corner of 14th and T.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be cool. Right next
and
to
outdoors.
Right next beautiful outdoor patio. Go, Michelle.
Mm-hmm. Go, Michelle. Let's hear it.
The building's amazing. The suspended tables up in the air is impressive. Mm-hmm. The fire pit, like I said, or I'm sorry, the patio will seat about 60 people.
And will you keep that all year or for as long as you can?
As mm-hmm. long as we possibly can,
great.
Yes. And the neighborhood has actually been very welcoming. I've been out there taking applications and people are very excited about it. Everyone's excited over there.
Everybody's
so
waiting for
us. We've had a very good, very good experience.
All right, so let's talk Ted's Bulletin on the same street.
Okay, it's 14th and S, right across the street, down.
And that's a big
Swan space
too, correct?
A new condo building, about almost 6,000 feet, probably be about 160 seats. Will be the second Ted's Bulletin.
Wow, that's amazing.
All right, so for people that don't go over to
Capitol Hill,
to the Hill, and to the stadium, tell them about Ted's.
Great space, 1930s corporate art deco, so the design and styling is fantastic.
Uh-huh.
Really accessible, breakfast all day, comfort foods. This is a real personal project. Ted was my dad, no longer with us, but guy that taught us about hospitality and the importance of having meals together.
Mm-hmm.
So really busy place, and we wish we had more seats over there. Beautiful restaurant, and we'll duplicate that with some beautiful corporate art deco stuff.
Well, and are you
on 14th?
Will the menu be very similar?
Similar menu again.
You want the Pop Tarts? I would assume
homemade Pop Tarts.
Yeah, anybody who's over
boozy milkshakes.
The boozy milkshakes.
Well, more and more people are discovering Barracks Row and the whole area around the stadium. If you're over there, you got to go.
It's amazing. That's
great.
That has really developed.
What's our ETA on the 14th Street Ted's?
First quarter ish. 13.
Okay, so not that bad.
All right.
And wait, we got just one more minute. Mosaic.
Yep.
Oh, Mosaic
That's
is a really cool project. The Angelica Theater out of New York City. We're going to be right beside the Angelica Theater, which is mm-hmm. cool. This is our first kind of mixed-use project. It's a development of sorts, but it is really cool. All of our downtown friends in the restaurant business are going to be there. Jeff Black.
Well, it's the Eden's people.
Exactly.
Who do Union Market.
Fantastic.
They really know what they're doing.
Yep.
Most people aren't going to know what Mosaic means. It's Gallows Road and Strawberry Lane, basically.
That's
out
right.
In Merrifield.
Falls Church, Merrifield area.
Yeah.
And how big is that space?
That's going to be about 7,000 feet. That'll be our first Virginia matchbox. Very
mm-hmm.
exciting.
That is exciting. And what's the ETA on that one?
Again, first quarter 13.
Okay. Oh, my God. You're having twins.
Very busy.
Busy time. Yeah.
Busy little bees. All right. Well, let's do the website so people can find
Matchbox369.com.
And I'm going to ask one last question.
Go.
Are you guys looking to go? Are you looking to stay local? Or are you looking to
take it
national?
No, that's a ways away.
Okay. I was just curious.
No, we love D.C. We're in the best market in the country.
Well,
we've got a lot of work to do here.
That goes with us.
All right, let's get Danny Fisher back in from Ripple. Danny, we got about a minute here. Just any last shout-outs on your own wines?
No,
dinners?
He's got another wine to pour to wrap around this meat, so just you wait.
Oh, my wife, David's the alcoholic. I'm sorry.
David's hogging it over there. It's against the wall over there. It should go great with this dish. It's
from
Gigondas. Mm-hmm. This is a Grenache Syrah blend, a little bit of Mombetra in there, but kind of the benchmark of where Gigondas should be. Goes great with the curry.
Okay, I don't know Gigondas at all.
Oh,
so
sorry.
Gigondas
is an appellation in the Southern Rhone. So mm-hmm. we talked about Northern Rhone and Southern Rhone and the styles of wines. In Southern Rhone, it's usually Grenache based, a little bit softer, silkier. Whereas Syrah is, you know, a little more big and bold and
right.
You know what's insane? I knew that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You did.
Yeah.
You drink
like
a
you
lot of Syrah.
Yeah, I do, actually. All right, so let's make sure everybody knows where Ripple is and where you guys are online so that they can find you.
Our website is rippledc.com, mm-hmm. and we're located in Cleveland Park, just on the Red Line.
Right across from
the
big
Uptown
Theater.
The Uptown Theater.
And just tell people, this Rhone special that you're doing is going on till January?
Yeah, we're continuing this through January. We got picked up by a pretty big publication, so we're keeping it online for them for a little while here. And
Are you going to share?
Wine Enthusiast.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah. Wine Enthusiast. You're on Foodie and the Bees. Yeah. Come on.
I know. Well, I didn't want to, you know what I mean? This is a much bigger deal.
Of course it